Meet Reed Lance Rosenthal, rancher, number one best-selling award-winning author, and unabashedly, unapologetically, on the right side of the outstanding issues of our generation. But don't try to fence him in. Sometimes his positions will surprise you, because Reed is definitely his own man, with his own opinions. You might love him, you might hate him, but you won't be able to stop listening. Step over to the right side with Reed.
Happy Saturday afternoon. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the right side. KGAB AM 650 Cheyenne and its affiliates and the EBN network, webtalkradio.net. And happy Saturday afternoon to you. You know, actually, this show, unusual, I've only done it, I think, one other time, but this show is recorded, and I think you'll like it anyway. It's right up to date, because I am, as you listen to this, signing books down at Barnes & Noble right here in Cheyenne. I'm going to be there till 4:30 or 5, so if you happen to have some time, come on down. I would love to meet you. Love to meet my listeners. Love to yak with you, and it would be absolutely my pleasure. So today's show, which is, should we say, 24 hours in advance here. Today's show is going to deal with three things. Number one, I'm going to bring you up to speed on the latest and greatest, probably not the right word, the latest and saddest out of Europe, because it's evolving day by day, as wrecks sometimes do. And then I'm going to alert you to the probably the five or six greatest threats that face us based on what you've heard over the last shows, the problems with the dollar, reserve currency, Europe, Iran, our friends China and Russia, you name it. And finally, I'm going to keep my promise to you, which I have not done for two shows. My apologies. I got several emails on this. Thank you for the jog. And that was two shows ago when I was talking about the decline of the dollar, why that's happening, and why it's probably going to lose its place as a reserve currency of the globe with rather material adverse effects to the United States and to each of us. Who's causing that? Why it's being caused, etc. I also promised you in that show to tell you what to do to kind of protect yourself. And I mentioned that, you know, if you take these steps and it doesn't happen, which is what we all hope, terrific. You're prepared for basically any event, which can happen in a split second in this life, and that includes natural disasters. And if it does happen, then you're just one step ahead. I have not gotten that done the last two shows. There's not enough time in this show to get it all done. I mean, I could probably speak here for hours. I hope you guys aren't groaning out there, but we are going to fulfill that promise to you today and go over those things that they're not big, but they're major, if you know what I mean. And then last but not least, I'm going to tell you a little bit about my book that's coming out June 26, Land for Love and Money, because as I was finishing that book, it's off to the printers right now. Publishers approved it and all the proofs and all that stuff are done. You know, land is such an integral part of our lives, spiritually and financially, and I think it's kind of the root of our freedoms here, private property ownership in the United States. As I was writing this book, the tie-in to what's happening in Washington and, in fact, internationally with our land and property rights and how that might affect us really hit home. Now, I'm going to go over a couple bullet points that I cover in that book because I think you'll find it fascinating, actually. I did. I certainly, my eyes opened writing it because it coalesced my thoughts, particularly with all the research that I had done. So that's our show for today. And I'm going to start off here with what you can do to protect yourself if the worst happens. If you go back in my archives, I had a terrific interview with Nancy Stiortz. She worked for like five administrations. She was the National Safety Director, and she is one of the foremost experts in being prepared. And you know, it's kind of funny because when you listen to that interview, you're going to find that it took me a few minutes to kind of get to kind of get her into the swing of things. And by the swing of things, I mean she was kind of geared up for the interview, and she's a terrific, terrific guest, by the way. But she was kind of geared up for the interview as if we were talking about, you know, kind of the normal thing being a hurricane or a tornado or, you know, some type of natural wreck. And it wasn't until about 4 or 5 minutes in the show, I think you'll get a chuckle out of this in retrospect, in 2020 hindsight, that that we finally got to where I was going, which is, well, what happens if there is no natural wreck, but what happens if there's, you know, we'll use the Department of Homeland Security's term, a man-caused disaster. And when she got it, she really got into the interview. And there's some great tips that she had. Many of them I never even thought of. And I kind of thought that I had it all figured out, but I don't. So that show, it's on the right side. It's back in our archives. You can go to webtalkradio.net. Just click on the archive deal, and they'll all come up. It's really easy. Scroll back. It's going to be back probably 3, 4, 5 pages. And the title is Rito Rosenthal on the Right Side, Collapse of the Euro, a Mideast War, Social Unrest, an EMP Attack, Imagine the Unimaginable, and Plan. And Nancy Stewart's is my guest on that show. You should listen to that show because it really goes into detail on lots of things that you can do. But in summary, and many of these things you guys know innately, many of you hopefully have taken some of these steps. Number one, you should always have some extra fuel stored. Remember those long gas lines 30 years ago in Jimmy Carter's day? Well, imagine what happens if all hell breaks loose in the Mideast, and it probably is going to. Okay. Now, I'm not saying that you should store hundreds of gallons, although those of you who have rural properties might want to have a tank. But you should definitely have, you know, 3 or 4 jerry cans. Make sure they're plastic. Make sure they're approved. Make sure you store them exactly as recommended. This is dangerous stuff. You know, it can explode. It can burn. You know, be careful. But you should have 3 or 4 jerry cans full of gas, just in case. You know, if you have an emergency run you have to make, if things are going bad, whatever. Number two, this is one of the great tips that Nancy had, and she has many more. I really urge you to listen to that show. But have a charger pack for your cell phone. You know, if there's no power, how are you going to power your cell phone? How are you going to have communications, assuming communications are operating? Make sure you have one of those little porta packs. I think you can buy them for like $6-8 that will charge your phone for 2 or 3 hours so that you have some juice and you have some communication capabilities if communications are available. Number three, have a plan. This is really important, and this is a big item. Have a plan. You know, we all have families. My family has a plan, and we're kind of spread out all over the West. So we do the best we can, if you know what I'm saying, given the distances. But you need to have a plan. If something goes wrong, where are you going to meet? Who's going to contact who? Where is the secondary meeting place if the primary meeting place is not accessible or worse? You know, you need to be able to coalesce your family, your close friends, your group, you know, whatever social unit you're operating in, and you need to have a plan as, in the worst case, there's no communications, where do you go, where do you meet? Number four, have extra food. Now, I know this sounds crazy and doomsday, but it's not. It's just common sense, folks. Think about a disruption where, you know, there is no fuel, so food can't be delivered to food stores, or deliveries are curtailed because fuel is $10 or $15 a gallon. Think about what will happen to the price of food. You know, not only are you taking a nice safety precaution here, but if inflation really gets out of control, if gas prices, because of something that happens in the Mideast or otherwise, go to $10 a gallon, who knows what, the cost of all services are going to go up by a lot. We're going to talk a little bit about that later in the show on another segment, which are the things we need to watch out for here at home. But the cost of food will go up, assuming it's available. So stocking up on non-perishable items right now could also save you money. You know, most of these things like canned food, that kind of stuff, I mean, they really have, in reality, indefinite shelf lives. But all the experts agree, and you'll listen to Nancy on this, they're absolutely fine for 2 years. So, you know, 2 years from now, the sun is shining, the birds are chirping, everything is cool, none of this occurred. Great. You bought food at a discount, you've saved some money, open the cans, have fun. So you want some canned food, you want some dried fruits. Think of the food groups. Okay, you don't want just, you know, 30 cans of peas. Get cans that have all the different types of foods. And no, I'm not a fan of canned food. In fact, other than soups, I'm not a fan of it at all. But canned food is better than no food. You can get dried fruits. You can get freeze-dried things. You can get all sorts of things. And there's actually outfits right now out there that you can go to if you want to spend the money. I don't think you need to. Where they'll prepare all this for you for whatever time frame and numbers of people you want based on your caloric intake and all sorts of other things. And you can find them on the websites all over Google if you want to look. But I think this is something you can do on your own and something that you can do pretty cheaply and something that you can do, let's say, over the course of a month or two. You know, you go to the grocery store and you buy an extra 20 cans of something that's on sale or whatever it happens to be. So that's very important. Number five, water. Now, you rural folks that are listening to this, you're in pretty good shape. You got a well. Okay. However, if you don't have power, that's not going to help you very much because your pump runs on power. So everybody should have some extra water storage. And, you know, it doesn't have to be a huge amount of water storage, but maybe 20 of those 2.5-gallon jugs that you can buy for about $2, give or take a few cents. You know, have them stacked up somewhere. Put them in the garage. Put a tarp over them. And they'll last for just about ever, as long as they're not punctured and they're kept sealed. And it could be very handy until your power is restored, your well is operating, or in the case of you folks who are on city or municipal water systems, until those city and water and municipal water systems are working again. Okay, number six. This is just common sense, but you'd be amazed at how many people don't have it. Like batteries. Get extra batteries. Now, batteries do have a shelf life. So if you buy batteries now, you'll need to use them in the next 6 or 9 months and then replace them. But, you know, have batteries for all your different types of small appliances. Make sure you have flashlights. Make sure you have batteries for the flashlights. And you should have an emergency radio. There's many emergency radios out there. We'll call this number seven. There's many emergency radios out there which can operate with a hand crank. They may have a solar assist. They also work off of batteries. They cost anywhere from $30 to $50. They have emergency channels. They can also get normal AM and FM if there's broadcasting. You know, you want something, some way to get some information. And those types of rigs, shall we say, might come in very handy, particularly if AM or FM is off the air and there's only emergency broadcasting, because they'll pick up all those different types of broadcast waves. But they're not going to work if you don't have batteries. And my suggestion to you is don't get the normal emergency radio, which is just battery or power operated. Spend a little extra bucks. I think it's 10 or 15 extra bucks so that you can crank on the battery and charge it, or that it has a little solar, almost like a dish. You can bring it outside and it'll charge itself. I mean, think ahead. I know this is crazy. I know this is not something that any of us like to think about. But I want you to sit back and I want you to think about, you wake up one morning, there's no power, there's no water, There's no fuel for your car. There's no gas or whatever to heat your house. There's no food left on the shelves at the supermarket. Just think about it. I know it sounds crazy. I know it sounds far-fetched. But anything is possible on today's planet. And there's big forces at work that, shall we say, make it more probable. Increases the chances of probability. How's that? So sit back, put on your imaginary what could go wrong cap, and then try and plan for it. Make sure you have some basic tools at your house. You know, a screwdriver, a hammer, some wrenches, a crescent wrench, just basic tools so you can do basic repairs, basic jobs. And last but not least, you want to have kind of an emergency getaway pack. Doesn't have to be much, but it should be in a duffel. It should be easily picked up. Everybody in the family should know where it is. It should have one or two changes of clothes, socks, you name it. It should have, you know, some extra batteries. Your radio should be near it. I mean, something that you can pick up, literally throw in the back of the truck, throw in the car, or whatever, and be out of wherever you're at in 10 minutes without running around, packing, thinking, whatever. You know, well planned. Let me tell you that, you know, I love to fish. I love to hunt. I have a duffel with my hunting stuff. I have a duffel with my fishing stuff. And, you know, those are for fun times and happy times. But it's really nice when I'm walking out of the ranch house to pick up that duffel, throw it in the back of the truck, and I know all my stuff's in it. Think about that same type of strategy, if you will, but on a much more critical level. And you will be way ahead of the game. Once again, please go back in the archives. Please listen to this interview with Nancy Stiortz because it was terrific. And thank you to those who have sent me emails reminding me that I never got to this part of the last two shows because there just wasn't time. And I have now fulfilled my promise. Put on your thinking cap. Protect yourself. Protect your family. And the worst that can happen is that you'll save money on the stuff you're buying now over what it's going to cost a little bit down the road. We're going to take a short break for a little commercial here. And this is Reed Lance Rosenthal, KGAB, AM 650 and its affiliates, and the EBN network, webtalkradio.net, on the right side, Saturday, May 26th. We'll be right back.
Land, for love and money. The beauty of the land provokes something primal, fills us with awe, and makes us yearn for land of our own. My land. Those words evoke a sense of security and a place in the world. Yet the word land also evokes nitty-gritty financial issues, business, improvement, tax, profit. It is love and money. In Volume 1 of Land for Love and Money, releasing June 26th, rancher Reed Lance Rosenthal uses his award-winning style to tell us real stories, the hard-hitting truth your banker forgot to tell you, about land of any type, size, or location. For those who are drawn to land purchase, ownership, management, preservation, and sale in good times and in bad. Reed is uniquely qualified to write Land for Love and Money, given his intense love of the land, his fourth-generation land heritage, and his devotion to wild and remote places, as well as his extensive $1.5 billion experience with the purchase, sale, management, and preservation and enjoyment of all types and sizes of land throughout North and South America. Hear the stories of success, failure, and lessons learned from the ground up. Land for Love and Money, to be released June 26th.
The guys who cut those commercials do a nice job. They really do. The Land for Love and Money book, it's way more than just your little treatise. Number one, it's filled with a bunch of stories, and they're true stories of good, bad, and ugly. I mean, some abject wrecks and some great successes that I've seen or experienced in my 40 years of dealing with land of all types, sizes, natures, you name it, for folks. And let me, I'm going to read you some of the bullet points off the back cover of the book, because I think this book is way more than you think. Even if you're not a landowner, even if you never plan to buy land, I think you'll find this is good reading. Of course, I'll admit some bias. Controversial real-life truths of land and real estate, sometimes serious, sometimes humorous, essential, eye-opening information you won't hear from your banker or attorney. That I absolutely guarantee you, folks. This is stuff you probably haven't heard before. Here's a few things that the book covers. Why your banker says no. What's really happening behind the vault doors. Another one. This ain't your mama's appraisal. The rules have changed. As you all know, you get nothing done in real estate without an appraisal. Another one. When it's time for the seller to sign the dotted line, forget price. Let's talk net. I see a lot of sellers get confused out there over the gross sales price versus what's going to be in their pocket at the end of the day, and that's not good for business. Number four, looking under the rocks. Due diligence and the PPPPP rule can save a wreck. Remember the PPPP rule? Prior planning prevents poor performance. Kind of like we were talking about just a few minutes ago, in preparing for the worst, and hopefully you'll never use the stuff. And you'll be money ahead no matter what. Oh, and then, and I think we all kind of understand this one, the government is not here to help you, and it might be on purpose. This is how it all ties into land. Kind of scary. Then another one, and let me tell you, now this chapter will make your eyes cross. You have no idea what's going on behind the scenes with your taxpayer money guaranteeing profits to banks through the FDIC. The mammoth real estate profits, guaranteed, all from your pocket. Thank you. I think this will give you an idea. Here's one more. Buying and selling smart, the silver lining in an age of upheaval. That's right, there's opportunities even when things are not great. There's great financing out there that normally you couldn't get, but it's not from a bank. And, you know, we are probably just coming off the low point in land prices, so it's a good time to buy. In any event, those are some of the things that the book covers. I think you'll enjoy it. Now, we are going to get back on track here, and we're going to talk about Europe. And I know we've talked about the last 3 or 4 weeks, but Europe is it's an evolving beast. That's exactly what it is. It's an evolving beast. So, since our last show, the outcome of the Greece elections are now kind of known, and you know what? Nobody really won. In addition to Greece being broke, Greece doesn't really have a government, because nobody won enough votes to form a government, which means nobody can really make a decision. And of course, this is kind of a critical time for Greece. Not that they'd make the right decision to begin with, but if you make no decision with everybody kind of bailing on you, it's probably not a good thing. In fact, it's definitely not a good thing. The parties were kind of split all the way across. The former majority party, which was called the PASOK party, P-A-S-O-K, they came in third place. They got about 13 to 14% of the vote. And then there's a radical left, I mean, you know, radical left-wing party. It's called Syriza. They got 15 to 17% of the vote. And then the more conservative party, which is called New Democracy, amazing name, the New Democracy, they got like 18 or 19%. And then there were a number of smaller parties that got other percentages. It was a pretty high voter turnout. But they don't have enough. They have a 300-member parliament in Greece. The party that wins the most votes, but it has to be by a certain percentage, which none of them achieved, gets a bonus 50 seats. That's the way Greece is set up. You have to have 151 seats to form a government. Remember, this is parliamentary democracy, not representative democracy, which is what we have. We're a republic. They are a democracy. It's a big difference. The bottom line is that the 10 million people who voted obviously could make up their minds. So Greece is pretty much a rudderless ship. Not that it wasn't before, but now it really is. So they have new elections that are going to be held the first part of June. And then we'll see what happens in the first part of June. In the meantime, Greece's finance minister came out and said that they have enough money left for 2 months to run the government. We talked about this last week, too. We didn't know it was only 2 months. I think I said that they'll be running out of money soon. 2 months is really soon, particularly when you're going to lose a month before you even have a government that can make a decision. So that's what's happening in Greece. That's probably not a good thing for the euro or the euro union. And on top of that, in France, as you know, Hollande, Hollande, was elected. He's an avowed and admitted and quite upfront socialist. The last socialist that France had in power was Mitterrand. Do you remember that name? I'm sure some of you do. And that was in 1981 and 1988. In any event, Hollande has come out and said, well, we really need to tighten our belts and we need to cut this deficit and we need to balance the budget. Gee, that sounds great. Man, this guy has a brain. Then he continued, "Oh, and by the way, we're gonna boost our public education system by 60,000 employees. Remember, folks, France is just a fraction of our size. By 60,000 employees. Oh, and we're gonna reduce the retirement age from 62 to 60 for people who have completed a certain amount of work. Now, just like the United States, there are certain social benefits that kick in at various ages. So you've just now burdened your social entitlement system, which is out of control in France to begin with, and you've made your society less productive. Remember that France, because of its past socialist tendencies and because of the unions, they only work 35-hour work weeks. They don't work 40-hour work weeks over there. So you have all these things. You have a guy who says he's going to balance the budget, but he has just cost his country, you know, billions and billions of euros more with just those two pronouncements, and he had a bunch of others. I think you get the message without going into the weeds here. What's really amazing is that France and Germany have been working side by side. Sarkozy and Angela Merkel, who's the prime minister, and pretty tough gal and a conservative gal, and firmly believes in austerity. Germany is well run. I mean, it's a good economy. It's fairly strong. Sarkozy, France and Germany were working together trying to solve the Euro Union problems. Hollande did not meet with Germany, first time in decades, prior to this big European economic conference we talked about in the last show. Instead, he met with the Prime Minister of Spain. Spain, as you know, is in dire straits. It's one of the four pigs, Portugal, Italy, Spain, and Greece. And many people think they're going to be the next one to go after Greece. And by the way, they're a much larger economy. Greece is tiny. It's the canary in the mineshaft. But Spain's a big economy. I mean, it's somewhere in the top 20 in the world. So very, very scary type situation. So they went to this meeting. And France and Germany are not shoulder to shoulder anymore on austerity, as is obvious by Hollande's stated wishes to spend more money. And things did not go too well. They did not go too well at all. Hollande and several others want to have a new European Union bond. In other words, the Euro Union would sell bonds, and then the money would go out to the countries that need it from this kind of central collection point. I guess it would be the European Central Bank, the ECB. That wasn't really clear in the stuff that I read. Germany and some of the more productive countries, the northern European countries like Finland, the Netherlands, etc., who are doing quite well, by the way, they said, no, we're not doing that. I mean, we're not going on the hook for money from China, let's say, that's going to be dispersed out to France, Italy, and Greece. You're crazy. I mean, that's the same as us writing a check, and we told you a week ago we're not writing any more checks. So there's kind of an impasse in the Euro Union on that whole situation. And, of course, that just breeds more uncertainty in the deal. And then I might add that in addition to the problems with Spain, the borrowing costs for Italy and Spain, remember, they're on the brink. They're right behind Greece. The borrowing costs for Italy and Spain in the wake of this uncertainty that we've just been talking about, because uncertainty means risk, and risk means higher costs when you borrow money, their borrowing rates went up significantly in the last week, once again putting more strain on their beleaguered economies and financial systems. On the other hand, Germany had a really large German bond offering. I mean, we're talking, you know, 2.5 billion euros. I mean, a big offering. And they were sold out, like in minutes. And do you know what they were paying for interest? Zero. It has a zero coupon rate. These bonds basically pay no interest, yet they were sold out. While the bonds of Spain and Italy did not sell out, well, they did sell out because their own banks bought them. We've talked about that. But they carried a much higher interest rate, anywhere from 4 to 7%. Does that tell you where investors' minds are at in terms of safety and security for their money? The security is far more important than the rate. And this will also play into what happens in Europe and the United States over the coming months. Anyway, this gives you a feel for what's going on in Europe, which is, shall we say, upside down, disorganized. Several of the countries that really need leadership have absolutely none. They can't even form a government. And there's a widening divergence of opinion because of the elections, particularly in France, over how things should be handled. I'll give you an update next week, too. And we'll see if they get everything solved by then. Right. So that brings us to our third primary topic of the day, which is kind of the things we need to be alert to, be aware of, and be a little nervous about here at home. Unfortunately, what's happening around the globe affects us, but, you know, there are bellwether signs here also. And the first one is runaway inflation. And forget the government. We've gone over this. Forget those government statistics. They're a lie. That's not what inflation is. I've done previous shows on commodity inflations, and you can find those in the archives. Copper up 100%, sugar up 160%, you name it. But let's talk about things which kind of affect, shall we say, everyday thinking. Things which are kind of in your face. So imagine if we have really rampant inflation. You go to the grocery store and you buy, you know, a couple of staple items. You buy some bread, you buy some peanut butter, some orange juice, and some bacon. And what if that costs you $50? I mean, that's a problem, isn't it? Yeah, you bet it is. And remember that underlying everything is the cost of fuel. Because it's transportation, it's heating, it's manufacturing, it's industrial, you name it. So keep an eye on what's happening with fuel prices. Right now they're coming down a little bit, and they're coming down a little bit for a number of reasons, but none of them have to do with the problem is solved. It has to do with temporary gluts in the market. It has to do with the fact that all the refineries have now completed the process of switching over to the stupid summer blend that the EPA mandates. You know, there's summer blends and winter blends and spring blends, and all it does is cost you money and does very little else. So there's a couple things which are bringing fuel prices down. But lest we forget, folks, if fuel prices come down 20 cents, I'm sure the president will pat himself on the back about what a great energy policy he has. That's still like about $2 more than we were paying when he took office. So fuel is up over 110%, even if it goes down 20%. That's a pretty steep rise in 2 years. And that kind of underlays lots, if not all, other costs. To give you an idea, we'll just talk about this year. The price of regular unleaded gasoline started at $3.28 a gallon. That was up 20 cents from a year earlier and 63 cents from 2 years ago. A gallon of milk is up 14% over last year. A pound of bacon, you know, our little imaginary shopping cart that we were talking about, a pound of bacon is up 40% over the last 2 years, and a pound of coffee is up 145% over the last 2 years. You don't hear the press covering this, do you? No. That's one of the reasons I am. Look, the CPI is cooked. Those are cooked books. The real inflation rate right now, we've talked about this, is about 11%. It's increasing, not going down. Okay. The reason that this is happening is, and we've also talked about this again, is that dollars are being printed. And by the way, this is being spurred now by the fact that euros are being printed over in Europe. So on both sides of the Atlantic, basically the Western world, we're printing money. And the more money you print, the less each piece of money, dollar, euro, whatever, is worth, and the more of those it takes to buy the same things. That's inflation. It's going to continue, particularly if we keep printing money, and that is apparently what we're going to do. Money supply has gone up from approximately $200 billion in circulation to over $2.2 trillion in circulation since 1970. But the scariest part is most of that rise has been in the last 5 years. In fact, most of that rise has been in the last 2 years. In approximately 2009, there was about $1.03 trillion or so of dollars in circulation. The money supply had increased dramatically. The Fed was, you know, printing money and doing its easing, trying to get us out of the crack that we fell into there in 2008. And then all of a sudden it started to rocket up. And now we're at $2.2 trillion. That's right, almost 100% increase in just a two-year period in the amount of dollars in circulation in the world. This is one of the reasons that prices are going up. Let me give you another example. The cost of steak has gone up 20% in the last year. Cotton has gone up 100% in the last year. Okay, the money supply measures in 2011, which are called M1 and M2. We're not going to get in the weeds, but bottom line is they're up between 10 and 20%. And as they go up, the number of dollars you need to buy things goes up, and the rate of inflation, not the CPI, folks, because that's bogus, but the real rate of inflation goes up. So this obviously is a threat to your income and to the stability of your life and to your ability to buy things. Number two, this is something that you have to kind of watch out for. In fact, I cover a little bit in my book because lots of people have now experienced banks failing and they have real estate loans with the banks and all of a sudden they're not talking to the same people anymore and the deals they had worked out are being ignored and everybody's scratching their head and wondering what's going on. Well, we need to be concerned. We need to keep our eyes open for kind of a banking collapse. And I don't mean when, you know, the too big to fails go down because they're too big to fail. In the Dodd-Frank Act, there's like six banks which are called systemic risks. And bottom line is the Dodd-Frank Act says all the little banks can fail, and here's all these tough regulations, but these big banks, these big outfits, they're so big that we could never allow them to fail because they're a systemic risk. I won't go into what I think of that whole thing because I think everybody should be allowed to fail. But the bottom line is that the Federal Reserve has provided more than $16 trillion, that's trillion, in secret loans to some of the most powerful banks and companies in the world, including foreign banks and companies, in the last several years of this recession. And in the end, you know who's going to have to pay for that? That's us. That's correct. Remember that government has no source of revenue but its citizens and their property. They have no other source of revenue but their citizens and their property. Don't ever forget that basic fact of life. There's also some things going on with currencies, okay, and we've talked about this. The dollar is under attack by its enemies, China, Russia, and Iran, and by its so-called friends, the United Nations and the International Monetary Fund, and that will also weaken the dollar. That means you need more dollars to do what you want to do. It also weakens American banks. It weakens their balance sheets. So be alert to any news or any scent, if you will, for a problem with banks, including, by the way, your local bank. The third thing you have to watch out for is an outbreak of war. You know, the drums of war are kind of beating. And I don't know why we're such poor students of history. But, you know, the sanctions that are kind of, shall we say, tightening around Iran, even though there's many ways that they're getting around them, it's still having an impact. It'll never have an impact to stop them from development of a nuclear weapon. I mean, I can't even believe that people still think that. I think there's two things that are going to potentially occur there. Number one, we have delayed properly handling Iran, and I'm including Bush in this. It's accelerated under Obama. He had a chance to take them out in 2009 when they had the uprisings and did nothing. But the bottom line of Iran is, you know, desperate people do desperate things. And if you put this country in a corner, it's going to react. Additionally, if you put Israel in a corner where it thinks that its existence is threatened, it's going to react. And the kick the can down the road, do nothing policies of the last two administrations, and particularly this one, have done exactly both those things. So much time has elapsed that Iran has been able to fortify its nuclear facilities. America not only won't stand up with Israel and give Israel some of these 40,000-pound mammoth bunker buster bombs that only we have, but they actually leak Israeli military secrets to try and forestall an Israeli attack on Iran, because Barry is worried about getting reelected. And, you know, we don't want a little thing like Iran getting a nuclear bomb and the safety of the entire world to interfere with his reelection. So let's kick the can down the road till after November. Here's what I think. I hope I'm wrong. But I think Israel will attack Iran, because I think they've been put in a corner now by the policies of the United States and others, and they have no choice. Because if Iran gets the bomb, Israel will cease to exist. Iran has said so, and there's no reason to doubt them whatsoever. In fact, I think if Iran gets the bomb, America itself is going to have some problems. But in Israel's case, without the conventional weapons that they need to take out these now heavily fortified underground bunkers, they're going to have to resort to tactical nuclear weapons. I would not be surprised to see sometime in the next, oh, I don't know, 2, 3, 4 months, whenever, I would not be surprised to see Israel use tactical nuclear weapons, not to destroy populations or urban centers in Iran, but to try and take out these deeply buried nuclear installations. And I think you know that all hell will break loose if that happens. The other thing that you want to keep in mind is that sanctions and embargoes that tighten the screws around country, they are kind of a soft act of war. And they're almost always a prelude to war. Because what you've done is you've created a situation where you've given the country that is subject to these sanctions and embargoes no choice. They're put in a position of having nothing to lose. I don't know what your dad taught you, but my dad taught me you never want to fight with somebody who A, can fight, and B, has nothing to lose. not a good place to be. Let me give you an example. Let's go back in history, and we're all familiar with this. So it's December 1941, Pearl Harbor, right? We're all familiar with Pearl Harbor. You know, the Japanese didn't wake up the day before and decide to attack Pearl Harbor. The attack on Pearl Harbor, and lots of people say it's intentional and all sorts, I'm not going there. The attack on Pearl Harbor was primarily precipitated by an oil embargo on Japan, which the U.S. placed in July of 1941, 6 months prior. Okay, Japan felt they didn't have a choice. They had to break the stranglehold of the embargo, and the way to do that was to destroy the United States Navy, even though it would precipitate a war. Let's go back in more recent history, the Second Gulf War. Okay, the first Gulf War in Iraq obviously never really ended. I mean, there was a hiatus, but then we were back there. What spurred Iraq, and I'm not justifying their actions, but what spurred Iraq in 1990 to invade Kuwait was embargoes that the United States and others placed on Iraq just prior to that. So here's two examples in history, both of which you're familiar with, where embargoes and economic strangulation to try and achieve an end actually resulted in war because the party being strangled felt they didn't have a choice. So if we apply the lessons of history to Iran, what is the likely outcome? Exactly. Iran is likely to precipitate or start a conflict or war, which, by the way, would affect gas and oil prices and impact the banking system and impact inflation, some of the first things we talked about. So keep your eyes peeled, your ears tuned, and your nose to the wind on anything like that potentially occurring, even though the mainstream media here in the United States doesn't seem to want to spend much time on it. Okay, we're going to take a little break, and I'll come back with number 4, 5, and 6 that you need to think about, and I'll see you in just a minute.
Best Western, Best Romance, and Best Historical Fiction Series of 2011 are only some of the accolades for Reed Lance Rosenthal's Threads West, An American Saga. Passion fuels each thrilling romance-packed novel of this widely acclaimed epic of the historical American West. Critics rave about Threads West, comparing it to Lonesome Dove, Centennial, and even to Gone with the Wind. Winner of 8 major national awards, this number one best-selling series unfolds the riveting, sensual, adventure-filled tale of a country on the cusp of greatness. Lives are woven into multi-generational tapestries of lust, duplicity, enmity, love, and triumph. It is the adventure and romance of America, her people, her spirit, and the West. Threads West, available at all major bookstores, Barnes & Noble, and Amazon.com. And the saga continues with Book 2, Maps of Fate, releasing nationally on April 17th. Reserve your copy today at www.threadswestseries.com. That's threadswestseries.com. Available on Kindle, Nook, and iPad, too.
That little commercial reminded me to remind you I'm down at Barnes & Noble as you're listening to this. Reed Lance Rosenthal on the right side, KGAB AM, 650 Cheyenne. And I'm signing books, and I would love to see your smiling face. I'm going to be there from 4:30, until 4:30 or 5. So please, come on down if you have a chance. All right, let's get back to the threats that we have to kind of be alert to here at home. How about $10 gasoline? You know, gas is coming down right now, and that's because the ridiculous requirements of the EPA to switch back and forth from winter and summer blends and all that nonsense. The refineries are done with their switch over to summer blend. There's kind of a temporary glut on the market, and I think you'll see gas prices come down a little bit more in the next few weeks. Don't forget, that's still 110% more than when Barry took office, and considerably up even from the first of the year. Now, if there's any of the disruptions that we've been talking about, and there could be many, it could be regulatory from the EPA, it could be conflict in the Middle East, it could be a whole host of reasons. Most experts think gas or the price of a barrel of oil will go from its current level of about $100 a barrel, slightly down over the last month, to $200 a barrel. That means $8 to $10 gas. And it means long lines at gas stations. Keep your ears to the wind on any possible disruption in the distribution of oil, in the price of oil, or in conflicts anywhere on the globe that could interrupt the supply of oil. The result will be potentially $10 a gallon gasoline. Plan accordingly. Let's take a look at the next threat. The next threat, folks, is the collapse of the Eurozone. We've talked about it. We're not going to talk about it anymore. I think you got the message. Make sure that you keep your nose to the wind on that. Don't go by these headlines that say it's all fixed. In fact, pay attention to the headlines that say it's not. Understand what's going on behind the scenes there and what the difficulties are, and parlay that into actions you take for you and your family. Let's talk about threat number six. Threat number six is what they call the China bubble. The China bubble, you know, China is immensely powerful. And they will continue with their assault on the U.S. dollar. The dollar is a reserve currency, buying resources all over the world from under our noses, expanding their sphere of influence, and building their military. However, while they're doing this, they also have an economic problem at home. In fact, many experts think that what's going on there in China right now is similar to what happened in the Western world in 2008. They have a debt bubble. Their real estate market is in a bubble and beginning to crash, fueled by all sorts of government investment in industries, which has created jobs, which has created demand for real estate in a pretty new class of folks over there, the Chinese middle class, who have been out buying things like crazy. And exports, at the same time, exports from China are down because the rest of the world is in recession. So their exports in many industries have gone down 20 to 30% in the last year. Basically, you could see the economic engine of China, not their threat to us or what they're doing to us or to our dollar, but their economy as kind of a locomotive pulling a lagging world right now. You could see that greatly decrease over the next year, which is also going to have detrimental effects globally. In fact, they may not be able to buy our debt anymore. Think about that. We might have to stop spending. Wow, what a novel concept. Okay, the last thing is, think about civil unrest. Now, the media has done a lousy job, as usual, of covering this, but these protesters who used to be called Occupy Wall, well, they still call themselves Occupy Wall Street, but they've morphed. If you go back to my show where I interviewed Anoop Desai, one of the original, I think, purely intended, although I don't agree with him, instigators of the original Occupy Wall Street back in Zuccotti Park last year, and that's in the archives, you'll see that I told you this is not going away, it's going to morph, it's going to get more violent, it's going to get more dangerous. That's exactly what's happening. This latest thing in Chicago with this NATO conference, you know, poor cop got stabbed. If you've seen any of the film clips, which most of the media isn't even carrying, you know, batons and baseball bats and all sorts of violence. And these people are anarchists, and they're financed. O'Reilly had a great segment on this. They're financed by the Center for American Progress, and they're also financed by the Tides Foundation, which is George Soros and that whole crew. Remember, the Center for American Progress is run by a guy named Podesta, and Podesta is the guy who lined up the lease of Zuccotti Park to begin with. The same crew has been behind it, but now with their money, this is an organized effort between the left and the unions, and they want violence. They want civil unrest. They want a reason for the government to seize and control more power. And that leads me to what I'm going to be talking about in the next several shows. Number one, we're going to come back to our gun control issue because I've been doing a lot of research on it. I gave you a taste of it last week. It's kind of scary what's going on, and your eyes will bug out because my eyes bugged out. There are some things I just didn't know. But I'm also going to alert you to some other dots I've uncovered, and I think that just like everything else, they're all interrelated. There's four or five executive orders which Mr. Obama has silently and secretly signed over the last 6 months. There's some provisions of the NDAA Act, the National Defense Act, which the morons in Washington passed. Drones will be flying over United States airspace, supposedly to look for terrorist activities, starting this month, right now, real time. Drones. These are the same predator drones that patrol the skies over Pakistan. I don't know about you, but I'm not sure I like that idea. But I think if you take all this information, which I'm going to do for you next week, and you start putting it together, you start seeing a pattern. And the pattern is not pleasant. At the best, it's not pleasant. At the worst, it's petrifying. So that's going to be next week's show. And I sure appreciate you listening today. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal, KGAB AM 650 Cheyenne and its affiliates, and the EBN Network, radio, webtalkradio.net. And you have a great Saturday, and you have a great week.
For more information about Reed and his work, please click on the globe in front of you on the webtalkradio.net page. You can also click on the first two volumes of his number one best-selling historical Western series, Threads West, An American Saga, and the newly released second book, Maps of Fate. And on June 26th, the first volume of his new nonfiction book, Land, for Love and Money, will be available everywhere. Please remember, if you've missed any shows, just click on Show Archives on Reed's WebTalkRadio.net page, and you'll find all of his shows. We look forward to seeing you here again next week for another episode of Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side.